Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us. My name is Daryl Urbanski, your host as always. And today we're joined by Marlon Sampson, the esteemed VP of Finance at iCore Philippines. With a career spanning over two decades, Marlon is a seasoned finance executive known for his passion for nurturing future leaders and fostering a collaborative company culture. His expertise lies in financial analysis, budgeting, forecasting, and a deep understanding of tools like SAP and Hyperion Financial Management. Marlon's leadership at iCore Philippines has been instrumental in providing strategic direction, ensuring regulatory compliance, and driving significant organizational decisions. His diverse experience from roles at McCann World Group to Citibank showcases his adaptability and prowess in the financial sector. I've asked Marlon to join us here today to share his journey plus his insights. So thank you so much, Marlon, for joining us. How are you doing?
Hi, Daryl. Thanks for inviting me in. Thank you for that introduction. So I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, it's an honor and a pleasure to have you. And I always like to ask, before we get into the details, how did you even get into finance? Is this something like, is this the family career? Were your parents in finance too?
Yeah, you could say it is, but I didn't take up finance because most of the families in finance. When I was a kid, I really liked working with numbers. And I really saw myself in the corporate world. That made me take up accounting in college.
Did your parents work in the corporate world too? Is that maybe how you got the role model?
My dad did, yeah. He worked for this huge company in the Middle East. And most of my uncles were in the corporate world.
Got it. So you had your role models that you looked up to. They were successful and influential in that space. So how did you first get started? Did your parents give you training of any sort? Did you have to help run the family sari store and balance the books for that or what?
Not really. Actually, my dad wanted me to take up medicine since we didn't have a doctor in the family yet. But I said, hey, I really want to be in the business sector. I want to take up accounting. So I think that's where my passion is. That's why, and here I am.
So you liked numbers as a kid. You wanted to get into accounting. And it was just sunshine and rainbows. Like it was just flawless uphill, just a nice hockey stick kind of progression and growth. Or were there challenges that you faced?
Overall, I think it was. Every now and then you face challenges, right? It's not easy climbing the corporate ladder. And I think the biggest challenge there is you really have to prove yourself that you deserve it, right? As they say, if you're earning $20,000 a month, and you want to get 30,000, you have to work like you're earning 40,000.
I like that.
So you really have to show that you have that can-do attitude, you can do it, and you deserve that promotion. They're not going to promote you and say, hey, we're going to promote you and let's see if you can do this or let's see if you're qualified. You have to be able to show that you're already doing the role or the function required for that next level, for that higher role. And you have to be able to prove that you're hungry, that you're willing to do what is required and go above and beyond the call of duty.
I love that. And I think that's relevant in almost anything because a lot of people don't realize this. A company exists to solve a problem experienced by a company is just a group of people that solve the pain of another group of people. And they do it via that's a right. product or service. And so a lot of times, I think when people hear about these massive layoffs in companies, what's happened is the company has not really had clear accountability in how people are contributing to that mission and performing in relation to that mission. And so they accumulate a lot of, it's called fat, right? They accumulate a lot of people that are there collecting a paycheck, but they're not contributing to the core like function of the company and the purpose of its existence. And so then you get these massive layoffs where they're just like, hey, we can't support all of this right now. Because at the end of the day, it's like fire clings to that which gives it life. And when you say you have to be committed to the mission, like you, if you're going to not only stay with the company, but grow within the company, you have to be like the flame to the fuel. Like you have to be attached to the core. And I think that's what you're saying there, right? And show that you're more attached than the others. Is that fair?
I agree. At the end of the day, it's really about the value that you provide to the business.
Right.
It's not just being like another person who makes life probably easier for some folks, but the function is not really that necessary in achieving the objectives of the business. So at the end of the day, you'll be paid and you'll be retained based on the value that you provide to the overall company objectives.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. A lot of people don't realize that for someone to spend like $100, they need to believe that they're getting $101 or more back.
That's
And
correct.
Ideally, what I always tell my clients is a 10 to 1. Like you want, ideally, you want your margin to be a 10 to 1, where if you're charging $1, they're getting $10 in value. Or sorry, both. Yeah, they're getting $10 of value, but it only costs you $1. Because you need to have
right.
that margin, but you also need to have that giant gap. And that's because you need the wiggle room.
That's correct.
I think is really powerful. Really powerful. So what were some of the biggest challenges you faced in your business career? And how did you overcome them?
Yeah, like what I said, it's really proving yourself, especially working in several multinational companies where you have employees across the globe. So everyone across around the globe is really eyeing that position. I think it's really more about being the hardest working person always in the room and keeping or having a clear set of objectives, always keeping your eyes on the prize, right? And every day you work towards that. So it doesn't have to be making big projects or significant progresses along the way, having small progress every day, improving yourself every day, even just 1%.
I love this.
You have 365 days in a year.
I love, right? Yes. Is this like in a book or something? Because I say this and I don't know where I got it from, but you just said it. So I'm like, clearly this is a thing. Because even if you improve 1% a day, just 1% a day,
right?
365 days, that's 365% improvement. How powerful
exactly.
is that? How powerful is that?
I think it's the power of compounding, as they say in finance, right? Little improvements every day is better than none at all.
Right.
The problem with some people is they always wait for that big opportunity, for that
yes.
big project. But
yes.
guess what? Sometimes
yeah.
those big opportunities don't even come at all.
Yeah.
Right?
I've heard... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
And you get stuck where you are, still waiting for that big break. Right? You don't realize that you have to keep working on yourself for those opportunities to come.
That's right. Yeah, God helps those who help themselves. Whether you're religious or not, it still rings. The harder I work, the luckier I get. Hard work will always beat talent when talent refuses to work hard. That's a catch-22 because people don't... If hard work was all you needed, more people would be successful. Because I know lots of hard workers that have failed. I know lots of hard workers that they get to the end of the road in their life and they don't like where they've ended up. But they worked hard their whole life. So hard work is not enough, but it's still mandatory. Even when you look up like the Zen monks and the Buddhists and people who have supposedly achieved enlightenment, they say, even though you've become enlightened, you still need to carry water and chop wood. And what that means is you still need to do the things that you need to do to move, like the stuff that makes you, like you got to chop wood and carry water. Like you're enlightened. Congratulations. You still got to chop wood and carry water. And so that hard work is just like a heartbeat of the planet. I say this too, like people can look outside and you see the birds and squirrels and ants. They don't get weekends. They don't get holidays. They don't have vacations. Oh, I need a mental health day. Oh, Mr. Cat, can you come back tomorrow? I'm a bird and I need a mental health. Like that just doesn't exist. This is an illusion. It's a fantasy that we've opted into as a species, which is nice. It's nice to have time off, right? You feel better. And it doesn't, you don't necessarily have to just work hard. You have to work smart.
Right.
With that, I don't want people to think it's all about the grind where you 4-hour night sleeps and stuff. Like silence is as much music as sound is. Rest, like even in talking, I need to shut up every now and then, right?
Yeah.
So what would you recommend to someone who's maybe starting out or struggling in their career and trying to climb the corporate ladder? We've established work hard, but are there any more specific tips?
I think you should be really clear on what you want. Some people start out not knowing where they want to go. And then they just grab the first opportunity that comes. And most people, for example, they join the bank industry in their first job. And then they just tend to go around the industry, move from one bank to another.
Right.
And over the years, they get intimidated. They don't have the confidence of moving outside of the industry. Hey, this is where I started. This is what I know. And I think you really have to have that courage to explore, to learn more, because courage only happens outside of the comfort zone. right? You have to be comfortable being uncomfortable, right? You're not going to learn anything staying in there. When you feel uncomfortable, that means you're learning. And the only way to grow is to learn new stuff.
I think that's a good point. Everybody talks it like it's fun to rock, get out of your comfort zone, but it's really uncomfortable.
Yeah, it's not
people don't like it.
It's naughty.
It's suffering. It's uncertainty. It's fear. It's doubt. It's imposter syndrome. It's all those things. Yeah.
Correct.
Got it. So now let's talk about finance a little bit in terms of what are some of the biggest mistakes that you see either your clients, I guess you're working with one company, but what are the biggest mistakes that you see people making in managing their finance, whether they're other businesses or friends that you have that are running their operations?
Yeah, over the course of my career, I would say some of the biggest mistakes that people make in finances, they forget about cash flow. Sure, your business may be profitable. You may be earning more than enough for the books. You may have a great return on investment. But if you don't have the cash flow to continue running the business, then you're done. You still need to keep the lights on. You need to pay your employees. You need to pay your taxes regularly. Managing the cash flow is really an important aspect of the business. And I would say some of the biggest mistakes I've seen, not necessarily related to finance, is some businesses don't really know their customers very well. Sometimes you see events and then you see these company logos, the sponsors, and then you start to wonder, hey, why is this logo here? Do they expect to really reach their market in this event? Some people do shotgun marketing.
Yeah,
they shoot anyone hoping they'd make a sale. But to me, marketing is more about, it's not about reaching as many people as possible, but reaching the right audience.
Ooh, right? I love that.
So if you're in the business of making toys for kids, you're not going to run ads during the news or during the late afternoon here in the Philippines it's nap time or all these drama series are showing on TV. Kids are not watching by then, right? Probably do those during Saturday morning cartoons or anytime when the kids shows are showing. So I think that's really important. Second would be people, like what you said, people forget that a product or a service is supposed to address a need or a want.
Right.
Yeah. If you look at big brands like Apple, Nike, if you look at their ads, Apple doesn't say, hey, we have the fastest computers. Go, please buy our computers, right?
Right.
They run ads like, hey, we're the crazy ones. Or Nike doesn't sell shoes in its ads. It pays homage to great athletes.
Yep. They're sending the light, they're selling to who the people want to be and become. You mentioned Apple. Apple, in its early days, they had that famous 1984 ad that was like anti-establishment in Apple's first ad, right? Back whenever that was, when it came out. And that was like, that's what the people wanted. It was in the culture. Like, we want to be free and independent thinkers and people.
Correct.
Or like you say, Nike. People don't go, hey, I want to be the worst player on the field. So Nike's all about paying homage to the best players on the field.
That's correct.
Yeah.
You really have to create that connection between the business and the customers. And then the customers who resonate with that message will go and buy your product. That's one of the secrets that I've seen with most big companies when they market their products. And the third, I would say, biggest mistake is failing to adapt.
And
change is the only constant thing in this world. So if you don't adapt, you're going to go extinct. Look at companies like Nokia. They used to be the biggest phone manufacturer. Or companies like Blockbuster, or here in the Philippines, Video City and Astrovision. We're into movie rentals.
I love the Blockbuster example. I use this one all the time because Blockbuster was a $2 to $6 billion per year business. They could have hired any talent, they could have developed any technology, they could have bought their competitors, but they lost touch with the market. There was a disconnect, right? They were so focused on monetization and growth and expanding, like they're off. They thought they knew what worked and we just need to scale. But they lost touch that this is a recreational activity, that if I'm a hairdresser, if I'm a waiter or waitress, or if I'm a mechanic or whatever, I'm a tradesman and I've been on my feet all day long.
Right.
I want to go home and relax. I don't want to drive to a location and stand in front of 1,000 options, paralysis by analysis, then decide to do business with you, take it home, and then have you charge me extra money because I didn't get it there. I got it there late. Blockbuster That's had right. the opportunity to buy Netflix and they didn't. They're like, this is going to yes, be. Exactly. Netflix started like pizza delivery. You get a paper catalog and you would order the movie, call, they would deliver it to you, and then they would come pick it up. And it was just like pizza delivery, or even like Lazada we have now, or Amazon shipping delivery, but for movies. And then Blockbuster was so ignorant of it. And they were ran bankrupt in a matter of years. And Netflix does something like 40 times the profit with 10% of the staff. I forget the stat, but it was something ridiculous like that. Like they make exponentially more money because they've got a wide, because they, anyways, I'm going to shut up there. But yeah, I think it's just a great example. I think it's a great example. I love that one.
Yeah. And coming from those small beginnings, Netflix is now producing its own movies, its own series. Companies can have that growth trajectory,
right,
as long as you're connected to your market, to your customer, what need or want that you need to address.
Yeah, I agree 1,000-fold. Yeah. I love it. So what do you think are some of the most important skills or behaviors for your staff to have or improve and to have or develop to march into this future that we're headed into?
I think adaptability is very important. Technology is evolving really fast. You now have AI, you now have bots being able to do some of the manual work that has been done previously by people. So being able to adapt to this new technology is really important. Acquiring new knowledge, new skills, and being able to, or being up to date with the new developments in the field. Accounting continues to evolve, right? It's not just accounting. Tax regulations are updated every now and then. In the Philippines, we just overhauled our tax system a few years ago during the previous administration. So I really think you need to be...
Do you feel it was for better or for worse overall?
Sorry, come again?
The overhaul. Do you feel it was for better or for worse overall? General, without getting into details that you, if you worry that it might get in trouble, just your how you personally feel. Was it an improvement?
Okay, if you ask the masses, yes, it was. But if you ask the businesses, they removed some of the tax incentives that they provide to most companies. So I think it has been a challenge for the past few years.
Yeah. Okay, fair enough. Just curious. So some of the skills, say adaptability, focus on what matters, new skills and knowledge, being up to date on things. Any other skills or behaviors that you think are mission critical?
I think managing relationships is also important, having those interpersonal skills, because you deal with people both inside and outside the company every now and then.
Right.
And I think if you really want to climb the corporate ladder, you really have to learn how to manage those relationships, right?
Right.
Being able to create connections with key people across the organization is very important.
Yeah, that makes sense. So how, I guess you're working with a large like offshoring company. When it comes to training, do you think, and this is just your opinion, do you think it's important, I guess, what's the cadence? What's the schedule? Is it daily training, weekly training, monthly training? Is it important to have a dedicated department to that? Is it a mix of internal, external training resources? How do you approach that? And also for people that are listening, like if they have a business, they have to figure out, how do I even know what to budget for this?
Mm-hmm. I think it's a mix of both internal and external. I, at the end of the day, I think the most important step there is identifying what the people need, right? People in the organization have different skill levels depending on their experience and what level they're currently in the company. So I think it's important to take an inventory of those skills and be able to identify what skills the business needs, what skills need to be enhanced, and being be able to develop those trainings internally if you have the resources, or maybe even look outside if you don't, right? But I think more importantly is when creating training plans for employees, I think what's important is being able to determine the career path that, that an employee wants to take. You may be developing this employee for this role. Does he or she even really want it? Is it in line with this person's interests? Maybe, right. maybe he or she is in accounting right now, but the, maybe her plan long term is really to move to HR.
Right.
So you really need to get to know your employees. What do they want in life? Where do they want to go? And be able to help them get there. And that's where you start, or that's how you create your training around those needs or those aspirations. And that way you motivate your employees and you keep them in the company. You keep your best performance in the company.
Is there like a rule of thumb? Like I've heard some companies say 20% of your revenue should go towards marketing. Is there like a rule of thumb like that for training and developing staff?
No, I don't think there is, but I think the higher the budget, the better it is. But it really depends on, like I said, what's the current skill level in the company and what do we need to enhance, right? And from there, you create that budget based on what you need.
Okay, okay. Are there any boundaries? Is there like a ballpark range? Like 1% of a company's budget should be put towards training, or again, personal opinion?
No, there isn't. It really depends on the appetite and the need.
Okay, okay, okay. Fair enough. So what are some of the habits that you think have helped you and will help others on their path to success?
I think being able to every now and then take stock or inventory of what you have achieved so far and always keeping your eyes on the prize, like what I said, always working towards that goal every day. Making sure that every step you take is in a direction, moving in that direction towards your ultimate goal. So you really have to know what your personal mission is, or what's your true north, or what's your why. That's what some people call it. Being able to track your progress and connect with people who can help you achieve that objective. Everyone needs help. So I think managing relationships, being able to connect with people, and having that courage to ask help. I think that's also important, because most people think, hey, you know, I don't need anyone. I can do this myself. I just need to work hard and eventually I'm going to get there.
Right.
Which to me is not a very efficient, and it's not the right way to accomplish things. I mean, great things have always been accomplished by good teams.
Right.
Same with your personal career. Yeah. So you really need mentors, good mentors, or people who will support you. So managing relationships is also very important. What else?
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
I
think those are the two important things. Yeah.
And what do you feel are some of the future trends of your industry in terms of, like you mentioned, there's technological disruption, geopolitically, things have been up and down, geopolitics. I don't want to go into some other things, but there seems to be a group with an unelected group that has their own agenda for the world. There's just things that are happening and moving in place. And what do you feel are some of the future trends in your industry that you're keeping tabs on and you think others should as well?
Yeah, a lot of people are saying AI is soon going to replace call center agents. But at the end of the day, I think people still prefer to deal with a living and breathing human being who has emotions, who can connect with you and address your concerns. Sure, AI may be able to do some of the basic stuff, like when you call the phone and make a few basic inquiries.
Right.
But at the end of the day, if you really want that great customer experience, which everyone is really after, and if you really want to make that connection with your customer, I think people are here to stay.
Yeah, I agree. I liken it. It's actually, I use this analogy even when I don't have a financial expert here, but I say, for me at least, AI is like calculators when they've came out. Like before, bookkeepers and accountants and financial planners would have to crunch the numbers themselves. And then calculators came out, and the productive ones became more productive, and the less productive ones lost their excuse for why it took them 2 days to do 2 + 2 = 4. And I think that's where we're at now. I don't know if anyone there has been using AI. It's not really replacing anyone. Even I do some sophisticated things with AI right now. I've got a couple of coders on my team. We're a lean operation and we maximize technology as best as we can. I've been in the automation space for automating marketing and workflow process for a long time. You still need people. You still need butts in seats. Yeah. Like people want people and the tools aren't there. They're just not there. Like we're far away from the sentient being that can, like, that's just not coming. I think the big concern around AI is around censorship and imposing things on people. What I mean by that is, I use this analogy as well, that we don't go look up, we don't look for all the monkeys to kill, right? We don't seek out and kill all the monkeys. We might displace some because we're building houses and maybe a couple get hunted, but we're not like a seek and destroy, right? We're not out to get them. But when you have an AI bot that is censoring or shadow banning or suppressing opinions, views, that sort of thing, that is a seek and destroy robot. That is like Terminator from the movie, like Arnold Schwarzenegger. Yeah. It is a seek and destroy. So as long as these things are pointed at universal truths and evolving in the direction of almost following the scientific method, like the highest level of truth that we can attain, without enforcing and imposing things on people, now you don't have these seek and destroy bots, right? You just have a useful tool. And I think that's my opinion on how we walk into that.
Yeah, I think you're right. AI are just tools, right? They're just there to help you be more efficient. And the problem right now is they just start pulling things from the internet. You really have to edit the information that they're giving you. You really have to double check because, you know, they can do that, right? They just pull things from the internet and give that to you. And then they really don't know if that's accurate or not.
And there's something about the creation of knowledge. I read this great book called The Beginning of Infinity by David Deutsch. He's the godfather of quantum computing. And he talks about AI in the sense of it needs to be able to create new knowledge. It can't just combine things that's been given in different ways. And an example of this is that understanding that we are not the center of the universe was, at first we thought we were. And that's because the sun went up, sun went down, and it all seems to spin around us. And so there had to be imagination. Someone had to imagine things could be another way and come up with a theory and a hypothesis about it and then devise ways to test it and experiment. And for years, there was no way to do it. Galileo, well, I think I may have these facts backwards, but I think Galileo proved someone else's theory, which was something they imagined, which was that the Earth was not the center of the universe. And he proved it because with a telescope, he was able to now observe the phases, like we have phases of the moon, full moon, crescent moon, half moon. He was could observe first the moon, but also the phases of Venus. And the only explanation, specific explanation with hard to vary details that would explain that would be the geometry and telemetry maybe of I might just be making words sound smart, but geometry of the sun, this glowing ball being here and this object being this far away at this angle. That's the only explanation that explains the observations. But if it's just people say, well, that's all creativity is just combining things we know. But that's, think about Einstein, right? General relativity, the fact that gravity is that maybe also slows down time. These are things that's just created. We are knowledge creating machines. And AI is a long way from that. Yeah. It's smart. It does things really well. It has a speed, processing speed of computers, but it's not creating new knowledge yet.
Yeah, I think we're far from that.
Yeah, I think so too. It's exponential, sure. But that's, again, it's still a robot at the end of the day. So now, do you feel anything holds people back? Or maybe even do you feel anything held you back in your career?
I would say yes, but at the end of the day, it's really how you deal with it. There would always be naysayers, right, along the way. But to me, that just motivates me more to really show them and to really prove myself that I can do it.
Right.
Yeah.
So what are some strategies that maybe you could suggest for the listeners to be more effective in enhancing collaboration and productivity within teams? Because like you said, there's lots of personalities, different agendas. Do you have any strategies that have served you well?
Yeah, I think getting buy-in is important of all the people involved in the project. and getting feedback also from the end users. People, sometimes people create these projects maybe to improve the process or enhance the system in place. But at the end of the day, it's going to be the end users who are going to use that. And they will be the ones who will be deeply impacted by those changes. So if you're not really in touch with your end users, not getting feedback on what they really need, what they are really using, and you can get a lot of insights on what you can really improve or what improvements really need to be made around that process. If you don't get the buy-in and get those ideas from your end users, I think any project would fail.
Right? Yeah, that makes
sense. Because then it's really for them and you really need to keep your tabs on that.
Yeah, fair enough. I actually want to jump back to a couple of finance things in terms of what do you think are the most important reports? Like again, if someone has, maybe they have a fractional help with their finances, or maybe they don't. They're doing it all themselves. What are the key, like you mentioned, cash flow. That's great.
Yeah.
There's certain, we know profit, loss, balance, cash flow, but there are certain projections. Should they know their runway? Is that like a number they need to update daily? Can you just wax poetic on that for a minute? Like just key fundamentals.
Yeah, I think you've mentioned the really basic reports that every business needs to have, your profit and loss. Of course, in a way, if your business is really earning, your balance sheet to get an idea of your financial condition. Of course, your cash flow statement, right? Hey, where is all the cash going? How is it being used, right? Are we generating enough cash flow for the business? And your budget and forecast, which can be updated as often as the business needs. Some do quarterly, they do their 3+9, 6+6, and 9+3.
I was about to ask. So you think, what do you recommend? A quarterly forecast?
It depends on what type of industry you're in and what kind of challenges you're experiencing. So I've seen businesses that do weekly forecasts, or they call it a weekly flash, and some do it quarterly. It really depends on the need.
That makes sense. If you've got a big apartment complex, you maybe don't need a weekly projection. Right. Yeah, that makes sense. I get that.
The revenue space, right? Yeah.
So let me ask, and I may have this right or wrong. That's what I'm going to ask. So it sounds profit, loss, balance, cash flow. Those are like historic. That's what's happened kind of thing. What is at the time of those reports. But your budget and your forecasts are future looking. And are there any ratios that people should be paying attention to as well that might be mission critical?
Yeah. So I think your basic financial ratios, like your liquidity and your profitability ratios, are important, as well as being able to track your growth, your annual growth rate, and being able to compare that against your budget or against your forecast or against your targets, and being able to make adjustments along the way. Of course, you may experience headwinds during the year. And I think it's important for management to really know, hey, where are we right now? How far are we from our goal? Are we on track? Are we behind? Or are we ahead of target? And once you give them that view, they can make decisions and make some adjustments on the business, so that at the end of the year, you would be able to meet that target or even exceed it.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, okay. That makes a ton of sense. So now this might be a benign point. What about data integrity?
I think that's a concern for most companies in terms of, are you providing the right information, right? Business decisions are made, big decisions are made based on the information that you provide to management. So data integrity is really important. If you can't rely on your data, that makes your report useless.
Right. Is there any rules of thumb? Obviously, I know in carpentry, they say like measure twice, cut once. Is there anything like that you've learned in your years? Like once a quarter, you need to go down to the bank. And like, I have a great, and this is a total random example, but, and it may not always apply, but it's just an example. I actually, in my neighborhood, there's a gentleman that was doing business with, I'm going to say it, BDO, and he was making his mortgage payments in cash, in person, Filipino.
Yeah.
Working in Dubai, paying for his mortgage, going into the bank, getting a hand receipt with the stamp, all that stuff. And then one day the bank was trying to auction off his house, saying that he'd been in default for 12 months. And it turned out the what do you call it? The teller was pocketing the cash and just giving him the receipt. Oh, and thank goodness he kept those receipts. And so that's like a data integrity thing where, like, he could have just trusted the bank's reporting, but the data integrity wasn't there because he wasn't watching those statements. Whereas because he kept the receipts, it saved him. So that's an example of, you've been doing this for a minute. So are there any things like that that you believe in that it's always good to keep a whatever? I don't even know what I'm asking, but I hope you get what I mean.
I think that underscores the importance of having good internal controls within the company. You know, like, is information being entered into the system accurately and timely? And in that case, the teller just pocketed the money, and then
they didn't log it. It mysteriously disappeared somewhere.
Right. Failing to record that transaction and update that customer's ledger was really, you know.
Oh, he won. It took him a year and a half, 2 years, but he won something like 40 million pesos as a settlement and all this sort of stuff. But it's because he kept the receipts. It's because he had an offline hard. This is my gripe with digital, like in the digital currency tracking things. I accidentally hit the wrong key. I erased your whole life. I'm sorry. So good internal controls, double checks to make sure the info is put into the system and correct, which basically sounds like you need a regular audit of things. Is that?
Yeah. I that's paramount, not just internal, but having regular external audits as well. Having outsiders validate your financials and your internal controls and certify or say that, these financial results reflect the company's financial condition and profit or loss for the year. And yes, they have good internal controls in place and be relied on, and help them produce accurate or fair financials is important as well.
Yeah, that's so important. The number of times that I know that people have thought they've had money and then realized they didn't have that money because it was bad data. It's just it's bad juju for everybody involved. Yeah. Marlon, this has been, I've got 2-3 pages of notes already on some of this stuff. I want to be respectful of your time. I know that we're running out of time soon. Is there anything I haven't asked you yet that I should have asked you?
No, I think we pretty much covered everything, Daryl, unless there's anything else that you want to know.
Yeah, I feel we did really. First, we talked about basically you're doing what you love, and you're really focused on the value you provide. The whole concept being the hardest work in the room with clear objectives, both what you're trying to accomplish, but also your why. And make sure you're constantly focused on the prize and daily progress towards goal, that 1% nonstop. And in a business sense, that you just got to keep your eye obsessively focused on your cash flow. And that you also your customers well. And we talked about how marketing is about reaching the right audience, right? And that market intelligence is everything. We gave a couple of examples like Blockbuster versus Netflix. So you really have to know the problem that you're solving for clients, but you also have to know that change is the only constant. So you have to be adaptable and focus on what really matters. You have to constantly update your skills. You have to make sure you're up to date, both in tax regulation, as well as with your staff and team, that training is a regular part of things because we don't really know what's happening tomorrow. So it depends on your needs. It depends on the skill level of the team, but it is important to invest in your staff and your people for growth, but you have to know what the career path for them is. So it has to both match their life goals as well as the company and your life goals, and that you're really focusing, it sounds like, on training people up, helping create new leaders for tomorrow. And there's a big focus on kind of accountability and habits, and that you also need to celebrate the wins, right? Appreciate your achievements. Yeah. And just make sure everything you're doing every day is a step towards your goal and track your progress, and that mentors and people that will help you are important. That to always, when you're working on a project, get the shareholders buy-in, the end users buy-in. And then we talked about the most important financials for most businesses to pay attention to, the traditional profit loss, balance, cash flow, but that they also need to have a budget that they intend to adhere to moving into the future. And they need to have forecasts that they would update at an interval that's important for their business, whether it's weekly, quarterly, monthly. And then there's also some ratios that they want to keep their eye on, like the liquidity ratio, their profitability ratios, their growth ratios. And they want to map this against their budget and forecast to see how they're doing. And this needs to be presented in a consistent, palatable way. And as much as it may not be sexy, there needs to be a strong emphasis on data integrity making sure and having regular audits of your process and system to make sure that you're not fooling yourself, that things aren't disappearing, that, yeah, the things are as you see them. So I just think this is a great action-packed kind of call with lots of practical advice that will be relevant today, tomorrow, 5 years from now, 20 years from now. If people do want to reach out, if they do have questions, if they want to get in touch, where is the best place for them to get a hold of you?
Yeah, I'm on LinkedIn. Just send me a connection request and I'll be happy to help anyone who needs assistance.
Perfect. So you can find him on LinkedIn under Marlon Sampson, MarlonSamson, VP Finance at iQOR Philippines, IQOR. And you're in Manila, right?
I'm in Clark.
Okay. In Clark. Got it. Okay. So he's in Clark. He's in the Philippines. You got the right guy. Marlon, thank you so much for joining us. It has been an honor and a pleasure. And thank you for sharing with us. It's been very valuable.
Yeah. It was a pleasure. It was my pleasure. And thanks for inviting me.